The show's Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the program today, for the first portion of the show, we'll be talking with writer, producer, composer Rodney George Peacock, and also an instrumentalist, multi-instrumentalist. He has brought with him a couple of cast members from his Noontide trilogy, which he intends as a mythological opera. It's being presented as a kind of a neoclassical theater piece, as he's calling it, with music at Follinger Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Urbana. A few performances of each of the three parts still to come, and we'll get a sampling of that and find out a little bit of Rodney's background. And then we'll be hearing from Bob Vaughn, who is director of Sangam Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield, about their 2010-2011 Performing Arts Series, which, of course, starts in the fall, and the season tickets are now available. We'll hear about that coming up on Live and Local. Some music of from the Miyumi project, featuring Tatsu Aoki on bass and a number of other performers here. Reeds Mawata Bowden was his name, and soprano sax Francis Wong, violin Jonathan Chen, drummer Hide Yoshihashi, and additional drummers from Amy Homa and Melody Takada. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Sort of a perhaps perverse introduction to my first guests on this portion on our show today. Rodney George Peacock is a composer, writer, producer, multi-instrumentalist, generally an eclectic artist living and working in Urbana, Champaign-Urbana area. Born. It's been here for a long time.
Born
in Urbana.
Yes.
He has rented out the Follinger Auditorium at the University of Illinois for a big chunk of time to do primarily a sequence called the Noontide Trilogy, which you meant to be a mythological opera under the inspiration of Richard Wagner's Ring Cycle.
Yes, sir.
But being presented as
spoken word with incidental music.
Yeah, give us. Well, why don't you give us a little background on yourself first, sort of the.
Well, I started music 12 years old, and I was first. We lived in Urbana. I grew up in for my first 6 years of schooling was in at J.W. Hayes School in Urbana, which is now Martin Luther King Elementary School. Then my father had a house built in Champaign, and I went to Champaign Middle School and started when I was 12 years old with woodwinds under Victor Self. And at 15, got a part-time job with at the university at the UICSM under Max Biberman, and I worked there and. There was a graduate student there named Wilbur Eaton and also a graduate student named Ron DeWar, who Wilbur Eaton introduced me to Richard Wagner's Ring. And then I got hooked on the Ring, and I thought maybe one of these days I could do something like that. And I studied under Ron DeWar with jazz. And
So this was you're about how old at this point?
15.
15.
Yes.
And you've been focused on the Ring ever since.
I've been focused on the Ring and focused. I went to the West Coast when I was 19. That was in 67 through 70. And I performed. I was a professional musician and producer out on the West Coast. And I eventually wound up my last 6 months. I wound up studying under Arthur Snobble's daughter, Mrs. J. Christopher Harrell. And I told her my wish to do an operatic answer to Wagner's Ring, and she groomed me for this project. She was, I was, at the time I met her, I was the stage manager and actor at Mountain View Community Playhouse in Mountain View, California. Mm-hmm. So she was, we did an English farce, I don't know the name of the farce, but we did an English farce, and she was the grand dame of the theater, and she liked the way I worked backstage and worked with the people, and I told her that I had been studying Wagner and opera for quite a long while, and we just hit it off, and I ended up studying under her and living in her house for a period of time and studying her father's making of the 32 beat recording of the 32 Beethoven piano sonatas, which Schnabel recorded in between 32 and 35, and studied the Ring.
What were you? You said you were working professionally as a musician at the time. What were you playing and
playing
were you
and producing? I played soprano sax, flute, and baritone sax in a rock band called 39 Homer Lane. I was co-producer of concerts with Santana, Creedence, Steve Miller, Fraternity of Man at San Jose Civic Auditorium. I was co-producer for a concert with Canned Heat that came over from England at the Berkeley Amphitheater. Did two major concerts, 68 and 69. And in between time, I worked in back at Stanford at Peninsula Children's Center. I worked with 20 of the most severe cases of childhood schizophrenia and autism in the United States for 2 years, because my interests were social services and music. And so that's what I did on the West Coast till I came back to Champaign in 1970, summer of 70.
And you came back here
I was born here. Well, I was out on the West Coast 3 years and never came back home even for the holidays because I was always busy. So I got kind of homesick, I guess you could say that.
And since you've been here?
Things were changing, huh?
And since you've been here?
Since I've been here, I taught music. I start teaching at Swain's House of Music, where I was selling band instruments in Palo Alto, University Avenue in Palo Alto. And I came back here and I started teaching, and I got into social service and kind of dropped out of the music scene for a while. And I concentrated on social service. I did 8 years at Planned Parenthood as a health educator for Planned Parenthood in Champaign County. I did 2 years at Developmental Services Center. And then I finally got back into the drama thing, the noontide thing was calling me, and I got immersed myself back into that. I went in 93, I went to Vienna, Austria, in the fall and winter of 93, 94, I wrote part one of the drama in Vienna. And then that's part two, took me 2.5 years of study working on it, and I started in January 2003 and finished it in July of 2005 with three editors. One of the editors was from the university, Jamie Hutchinson from the engineering department at the U of I, Jim McGowan, a professor at Parkland, edited on there, and Carolyn Baxley from Cinema Gallery, she was a prof here at the university in English, and she edited, so I had three editors on my work on the script. And so it's a continuing lot of work.
You said part two. Why didn't you start part three? Or
in Urbana, my studio in Urbana. The studio has been in Urbana for 5 years. I did finish part three in Urbana. Finished that in 2007.
So you started with the script?
1990.
And
when I started.
What is the status of the music at this point?
The music, I worked on the music and the words at the same time. Okay, a lot of motifs, mostly off of the piano. And the flute, piano, and clarinet is what I worked the motifs off of, like Wagner's motifs. The primary motif in the production is the sub motif that goes bum, 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 bum. That's the major motif. and then all the characters have motifs, and I brought the bass clarinet to play the serpent's motif, the evil serpent and his son Raper, the devil and his son, and that's the kind of the comic relief in the drama.
Well, why don't we get a little overview of the drama itself, and what you took from Wagner?
Okay, the drama is self-actualization, love, hope, and redemption are the themes. It is patterned after classic myth. As we know, the classic myths are handed down from word of mouth. The classic myth has a protagonist who has no mother and has no father, who is set on who is set to go on a journey to accomplish a task, to set things right and order in the world. And Christor is the protagonist. Christina is the heroine in this drama, and Christor has to defeat the old man on the mountain so he can get more years, have more years to bargain with death, to have eternity, so he can defeat the serpent of evil, so he can displace the serpent, so there can be no evil on the world, so people can get together and bring the coming of the Great One. So the Great One comes to the earth, and people start the noontide. The noontide is the coming of the Great One, a great event that happens all over the world that changes the perceptions of everybody on how they exist in the world. So that's essentially the
a very brief overview, because right. the whole production takes several hours.
It's about, I figure about 6.5 to 7 hours, yes. Yeah, that's very brief.
Yeah.
We don't have that much time, but
yeah. So you've actually done some presentations already at,
yes,
Folling Auditorium. We caught you sort of in the middle, and you've got two left of
each
part.
We haven't done any of the drama yet. We've done some concerts, but I did part one on the radio with WEFT. I did part one. I came back from Vienna. I did part one live on WEFT. Then I took it into Pogo Studio with Mark Ruppel. I took a cast of 11 into Pogo Studio, and we ran it through live at Pogo, part one, and with Vladimir Zaremba playing the reeds and me playing keyboards and flute. We did part one, a very good presentation of part one. I think we have a sample of that here in the studio. That's what we're going to queue up.
Should we start with that, then, you think? Might be
that.
A reasonable introduction?
That'd be a reasonable introduction to it, because she spells out what Christor has to do to bring on the noontide and get the people ready for the noontide, yes.
So we don't need an introduction to the introduction other than what you've just told us.
Other than what I just told
so
you,
So this
yes,
comes
sir.
From part one of the Noontide Trilogy. Does this part itself has a name other than just this is part one?
This is just Christina's soliloquy. It's self-explanatory. They're getting ready to meet the old man on the mountain. Christor has to bring the old man down the mountain, as Mother Earth wants him to bring the old man down the mountain, because he's been up there for thousands of years defeating warriors who come up to take him down. And Erda, who Christor meets, Mother Earth, Scandinavian from Mother Earth, also from Wagner's tetralogy, Erda, Mother Earth, and her three daughters, the Norns. That's what I used from Wagner, plus the motif thing. And they are prepared to climb the mountain to go after the old man. And the old man has never been defeated for thousands and thousands of years. And Christor, being a young man from shallow land who does not know himself, is at the mercy of Erda, because she is trying to help him find himself. So she gives him a task to do for payment for her helping him find out who he is and what he has to do in this world. So we find that they're in the garden and they're preparing to go travel to the mountain and to take the old man down the mountain.
So this is Christina.
Christina talking about how she feels about Chris Storr and what she knows he's going to do.
From the Noontide Trilogy
part
of
one.
Rodney George Peacock.
Yes,
part
sir.
One here on Live and Local.
Act 3, Scene 1, in the Garden of Erda at sunset. Chris Storr and Christina are there alone.
Chris Storr is changing before me. His movements are determined. If that determination is shown in other tasks, he could do anything. He says he loves me. He will earn my love. I'm falling in love with every word that moves from his mouth. I've watched him sleep these past 3 nights. He's a sleeping prince. I don't want to fall in love with a mortal. I'm trying to control my feelings. It's been such short time to be in love with someone. He will see the great light. He will make the contract with death. He will be the prophet. He will defeat the serpent. All these things Chris Storr will do. I can see in his eyes immortality he may win. Oh, the restless times I'm going through with this love emotion. Now is not the time to tell him of my feelings. He has to earn my love. The deeds which have to be done are great tasks. I believe he can do them. He only needs show me he is on the path to immortality, and we can ride the universe together. I hear Chris Storr coming.
And that was the tiniest fragment of the Noontide Trilogy from Part 1 by Rodney George Peacock, which was recorded at Pogo Studios.
In 2000.
And Rodney on the flute and Vladimir
piano.
Zaremba and piano and Vladimir Zaremba on saxophone. And who was the
Juliet Youngren. Juliet Youngren.
Yeah. And you brought with you two of the actors from your performance here. Now, you said you had like 11 people involved in that recording?
In that recording, yes, there were 11.
And how many actors total in the presentations these next couple weeks?
14.
And he's being prompted by his assistant, who is Laura King. Laura, you're a student at the University of Illinois in theater?
Mm-hmm. I'm an acting major.
And how did you get involved in this project with Rodney?
Well, he knew one of my friends who told him that she knew me and that she knew he was looking for actors for this play. So I went into the studio to meet Rodney and started reading for him, and here I am now.
And was there something particular that appealed to you about the production to say, yeah, I'd like to be involved in this?
Well, really, I was looking to do something in the summer, keep in my training, keep working in theater. So this was a good opportunity to try something new with someone I hadn't worked with before. So that's always welcome.
And our other guest is Anastasia Emmanuel. Is that how you say your
name? Yeah, that's correct.
And you are from England.
Yes.
But you have a connection to the U of I. Obviously.
Yeah, I was on exchange in 2005-06, just on exchange from my home university, which is when I met Rodney and became involved in the project and did an artist statement for him at that point. And 5 years later, flew the 3,000 miles back here to be on stage.
What were you doing when you were here?
It was predominantly a cultural experience. So I am just engaged in several courses of my own choice and had to get a certain grade for a year and just experience what it's like to be an American student.
And how did you encounter Rodney at that point?
It was, again, through a friend who had met him and had spoken about this project, and he was looking for someone to speak as one of the main parts. And he thought of me, and I went to meet Rodney in his studio and started reading for
Adam
him.
Adam Thomas.
Sorry?
Adam Thomas.
Yes, Adam Thomas is his name.
He's a connection.
Yes, my good friend. And yes, I went to his studio and began reading for him. And at that point, it was just a reading. And then we stayed in contact, and then he told me that he was making it happen, so to speak, on Folinger Auditorium.
And you're involved in theater in general or not?
At the moment, not really, because I've graduated and I've been traveling for a year, and so I'm sort of entering the career world as such. But previously, I have been involved in theater. But it was a great way to get back into theater because I haven't dabbled in it for quite some time.
So this is quite a project to dabble in.
Yeah, dabble's probably not the right word to use. You can't really dabble in Noontide. It's pretty full on and intense.
Yeah, well, from what point have each of you been involved in the creative process?
Well, I just came in about a month ago, so I haven't been around too long, but... I was there when we started rehearsals at Folinger, and we started getting stuff ready even before that, a couple weeks before that, pulling stuff together, pulling the cast together and getting ready, doing the blocking and the lighting. And so mainly just recently for me.
So are you sort of sharing duties of casting and who's doing the stage direction and so on?
Well, Rodney is doing it all. I'm just there to help him if he needs it, and basically just assist him in whatever, anything else that needs to get done, and help around.
I saw in the Champaign and Brandon News Gazette that there was a call for like 35 locals.
Yeah, we need a crowd.
Yeah, we're looking for a crowd for a party scene.
And has that produced results so far?
We do have a handful of people who have turned up, so that's wonderful.
Do you need more?
Yes, we are still looking for more.
If anyone would like to hang around on Folinger Auditorium and be in a crowd, please get in contact with us.
Yeah, for part two. Yeah. So it would be the 3rd and the 10th.
And what would be, should they contact? You, Rodney, directly?
Laura.
Yeah, they can contact me on my cell phone, and the number is in the article in the newspaper, so they can look that up there, or contact Rodney at his studio, and we will get back to them.
My studio number is 239-7623.
And we're talking about the Noontide Trilogy of Rodney George Peacock, who's with me, along with Laura King and Anastasia Emmanuel, who has something to read from the show.
Yes.
Give us an introduction to this.
Well, you've had an excerpt from the first part, which is, which actually wasn't me, but it was another Christina exploring her feelings for Christor and the task that he must undertake. This piece that I'm about to read is from the second part of the Noontide Trilogy, explaining a little bit about where Christina comes from, who she is, and how she came to be on Earth, because she is, in fact, immortal. So, yeah, that pretty much gives a little sum up, because Christor, her the protagonist, is rather confused as how she has matched him step for step on the mountain and doesn't sleep and seems to sort of have an all-knowing power. So this is her explanation.
Okay.
In the universe, there is Chell. I am a Chell. We nurture all that call on us, ever and forever. The Serpent of Evil blew into our space to conquer. It was our souls he wanted. We have no death on Chell. Chell's our servants to the thoughts of good. How we nurture the thoughts of good in our being is what repelled the Serpent. He could not take any of us. He and his army were starved, defeated, and left bewildered. Chells are born of pure thought. We converse through our thoughts and always appear in the present state of mind. Always. My mother heard a call from the caretaker of your earth. She came and saw the struggles of humanity in light and darkness. She did not interfere, but consoled the women of the garden by nurturing the tree of long life. Thoughts from my mother brought me to the garden. I am here to serve that which is good. I am a Chell, not a goddess. I am a Chell.
How do you spell that word?
Chell? Yeah. It's C-H-E-double-L.
C-H-E-W-L. W-double-L.
Yes.
And what does that come from, Rodney? Your brain.
Yeah,
just pointing
just
to
made,
you.
Just made it. Just, I wanted something that kind of had a ring to it and just came up. Like a lot of the names I just made up. I just made this up, you know, just...
Wagner, who was you know somewhat your model for this, had very much your model, had some, was it German and Germanic and Nordic myth, I think, in mind?
Right, he used Scandinavian myth. That's where Erda came from. Lurga, Thor, Donner, Wotang, Freya, Fricka, the characters in the ring, they're Nordic mythology. He used the Norse myths, and he combined some with some German things and his ring
and the background, some of the influences from mythology that you had in mind, or would be from where?
Well, just from reading a lot of myths and studying Wagner's myth, and I'm countering his. His had the gods being corrupt, and my gods are not corrupt. His tetralogy, everybody dies, and mine, only the people die are mine is uplifting. His was, you know, Wagner was anti-Semitic, he didn't believe in a God. He thought he was the best thing on earth. He was very, very egocentrical. He wasn't really a nice person here. I mean, we have to separate. We have to separate. Sometimes we have to separate the man from his art. And I had to go through this process of separating Wagner from his art, because Tristan and Isolde is really his best work. You know, I think, and Nietzsche thought so, and it's Nietzsche's contemporaries thought. I studied Wagner and Nietzsche because I studied German from the time I was in seventh grade all the way through high school. You know, and so I studied Wagner and Nietzsche, and Nietzsche and his contemporaries really thought Wagner was really, his music was really compelling until they really dwelled into what he was saying. And once they found out he wasn't really saying anything except promoting himself, that, you know, circumstances led to Nietzsche's falling out with the classic thing of Nietzsche falling out with Wagner. Everybody wants to know about the fallout between Nietzsche and Wagner, and I have a pretty good handle on that situation, and it's a...
That's probably a long story on its own.
It's a long story. I have Newman's biography of Wagner. It's a four-volume set. It used to be the biggest biography in the English language until Winston Churchill's biography came out. And it's only a small section in the four-volume set of Wagner's work, but it's a long story.
And that would take longer than your Noontide trilogy to tell.
Well, to get into the dynamics of it, yes. Yeah. To get into the dynamics and the details, it certainly would take a lot of books to go through that. Yeah.
Well, let's let people know, since we have only hinted at it, when they can go see the various parts of this trilogy. It's at Follinger Auditorium on the University of Illinois Quad in Urbana. And parts 1, 2, and 3 will be presented first time July 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday and Saturday at 7:30, Sunday afternoon at 3:30, and as you pointed out, after the parade in Champaign-Urbana. Before the fireworks. So just perfect timing. And then if you miss that or want to do it again, the 9th, 10th, and the 11th, again Friday, Saturday, 7:30, Sunday afternoon at 3:30, all these at Follinger Auditorium. We're talking about the Noontide Trilogy of Rodney George Peacock.
And friends, many friends,
and inviting more friends if there are listeners here who might like to be extras in part two. So on the 3rd and the 10th of July. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Support for our show today comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. We heard Anastasia Emmanuel perform a fragment of a soliloquy by Christina.
Yes.
And Laura King, you have a role in this production as well, in addition to Rodney's assistant. What's that?
Yes, I am the third daughter of Erda, who is Mother Earth.
And this is a character who carries over, as it were, from Wagner's trilogy.
Yes.
Well, trilogy plus one.
The Norns. The three daughters are the Norns in Wagner's tetralogy, and Erda's daughters. Erda's Mother Earth, and she's one of Erda's daughters,
and
the youngest.
And what would be a good introduction to this particular moment in the...
Well, I just left the Red House, which is this house of evil that the serpent and... his son live in, and I left Zacchaeus, who's the man I've been falling around healing, in the Red House. And so now I'm recounting my story of how I got to the Red House and what happened in there to my other two sisters.
Okay, Laura King as, again, the character's name?
Just third sister.
Just third? Oh, you don't even have a name.
She has a name, but it's revealed in the third drama.
Oh, well, we can't give that away just now.
She has a name, but it's revealed in the third drama.
From Noontide Trilogy here on Live and Local.
Zacchaeus did not need me. I gave him healing herbs to bring sleep and take the last of his pain away. Leaving his room, I stood in the hall with my back to the door and closed my eyes, wondering how to get out. Alone and for the first time without the sun, moon, or stars to guide me, I was lost and afraid. The heat was dry and I had a hard time finding the moist wind within me. I opened my eyes. There were four hallways with arched ceilings and walls bending like snakes. Doors were on both sides of the hall as far as I could see. I sat in each to decide which hallway would lead me out of this house. I was afraid.
That's very short.
Yeah.
It carries
I can go on, but
I'm sure it does.
It's many pages.
On. Well, you know, one of the questions I had about the production, Rodney, since you imagined this initially as an opera, and I gather would still like to complete it in that form.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Is what is the balance of speech versus music in this presentation?
Oh, this presentation, my whole object is to get the words out, get the story told, get where people will sit and they will concentrate on the words, not so much on the sets of bare sets. I mean, you know, it's not elaborate, nothing elaborate, but they get involved in the story and the music, just the motifs that will be presented to them. And in my concert Wednesday, I'll have a section where I play piano and work on some of the motifs of the noontide. So they get that. But my whole object, because it's so long, is for people to get involved with the story. So if I can have the actors enunciate and project all the way to the back of the house, because we're not using microphones, because this is a classic theater. So I'm trying to use this theater as it was meant for in 1907 or whenever, when it was, you know, as a classic theater where people have to project. So someone may be carrying their scripts, so let's hopefully people won't get upset about that. But I want them to enjoy the story, get involved with the story. When it becomes opera, I have a composer that wants will work with me to put all the words to music as it will be sung, and it's written lyrically. So it's not going to be. It's just going to take time to score it out for the opera.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and you brought along one of your instruments, which is the bass clarinet. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier you're also a saxophone. You're multi woodwind player plus piano.
Yes.
And you have one of the motifs to demonstrate for us.
The serpent's motif. The serpent, or we can say the devil. The serpent. The devil. This is his. See if I can get this thing to work here.
And we had
Ron DeWar gave me this.
Who did?
Ron DeWar gave me this.
Oh, did he?
Yes, sir. That's been my teacher and mentor for years.
Just a little background for those who aren't familiar with the idea of the motif, or the leitmotif, as Wagner called them. These are themes that are associated with particular characters in his opera, and I gather you're treating them similar
to his,
in your production.
Let me get a sound out of here. That works.
Somewhat threatening leitmotif, appropriately enough, for the serpent / Satan / the devil, played by Rodney George Peacock. Are you providing what music there is in the production this week and next? Are you providing all the music with various instruments, or are there others?
No, there's other performers. There'll be Thomas Forden is working as a musical director, and we have Nathaniel Reyes that's going to be on the woodwinds. And I'll be playing a little bit, because I'm all over the place here. It's just a small ensemble, and some of the music will be taped. Some of the music is taped, especially a section with Vladimir on the soprano. So we're just mixing in our mass music. Todd Rising, the mass music, is going to record some of this production. And we're just trying to present get a good representation to the community about this project?
You know what, it sort of strikes me as I was hearing Anastasia and Laura read their portions and then a little bit from the recorded portion that you did back at Pogo Studio a while ago. It almost sounds like live books on tape. You know, how if you're driving in a car or you're just sitting with your eyes closed or whatever, instead of sitting reading with the thing in front of you, you have the opportunity to absorb this story. I mean, it sounds like something where you ought to just close your eyes and let it wash over you, particularly as you... Some of the music, some of the spoken word is going to be with music behind it.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
And some portions just this music
just
on its own.
Music and then a lot of portions just the spoken word.
I mean, particularly since it's rather lengthy, you know, it's just, can I would think be sort of a meditative experience.
Yeah, I hope so.
For the listener and viewer.
I hope so. I don't want the music and the thing and the everything. I don't want it to detract from the word. I don't want it to upstage the story, because if they lose some of it, then they're going to wonder what's happening in it. So I want them to catch the story from the beginning to the end.
Well, it should be an enhancement.
Yes, it's an enhancement. Yes.
Yeah.
With the opera, that's different. The opera, the music is just as important as the words, and then the arias and the chorus and the opera and everything, you know, the grandeur, everything. But I don't have $50 million to produce something that big. So.
But you're spending some dollars to rent the Falling Auditorium. from somewhere or another.
Yeah, somewhere or another, yes, sir.
I won't ask where you got it.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. But you also mentioned you have a concert tomorrow night
that is
going to preview some of the musical elements,
yes.
You and Bill French.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Wonderful jazz. Is he doing piano or drums or both?
He's doing piano.
And you're doing?
Well, I'm doing bass clarinet, flute, alto sax, and piano. I'll be doing solo piano. Bill and I will start off with the first set, because Bill and I have been playing together for quite a while. First set, and then I'll go do the motifs and some of the music for the noontide, and I'll stretch out and go out to Yaya Land, maybe, on the piano.
And that's at 7:30 tomorrow
night. That's at 7:30. Everything's at 7:30 except for the Sunday matinees. All things start at 7:30.
Everything at Follinger Auditorium,
yes,
on the University of Illinois
Quad. Tickets can be bought at Follinger. They're $20 a night for students and $25 for adults, maybe $25 for adults.
It's a little more if you buy it at the door.
Well, yeah, it's a little more if you buy it at the door, but I'm kind of fluctuating between that and maybe make it just $20,
$20
and $25. This to be easier. So.
But if you want to buy the whole package,
whole thing,
it's a little
the
cheaper.
The whole package is a little cheaper, yes. Yeah. It's $70 for adults and what did I say? $55 for students and what did I say?
$70 for adults, $55 for students.
So you basically save $5
right,
to buy the whole piece.
It's a big production. We got to pay everybody here.
Sure.
the people not working there. I didn't ask people to work for free here.
Well, you brought Anastasia over from England, so.
Yeah, we got to take care of Anastasia.
She's got to get her
here.
Plane ticket back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we got the plane ticket back, but everything else in between here, we got to take care of.
Sure.
We got to take care of Anastasia.
Forever being a
We
got to
take care of Laura. We got to take care of everybody here. You know,
and we got to take care of Rodney.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Rodney takes they're taking care of me, so you know, they're helping me out. So yes, but you know, the idea is to take care of everybody. So that's why the ticket prices are, and I try to make the ticket prices where people can, you know, I mean, this is not Kranich Center for the Performing Arts where they got, so the ticket I thought were $20 was reasonable for one night for students. And adults at $25, I think that's reasonable for something that only, I don't think, there's no other trilogy that I know of ready to be performed in the United States right now, a mythological trilogy with music right now that's going on. I don't know, you know, I've been to New York, I was in New York relatively not too long ago, and Lee Metter, who graduated from the U of I several years ago, in the jazz department as a composition. She transcribed my piano works into overtures. And she did her work in New York. She's been in New York the last 3 years, and we've been talking and corresponding for the last 3 years. So a lot of people are involved in this project.
Well, very much a work in progress, essentially.
Yes, sir. It'll be a work in progress for a while, but at least I get it out to the public. At least, like you said, it's like a book. And that was a very good observation. You can close your eyes and you can, you know, be wherever you want to be with this. And just go with the words.
It's an epic.
Yes, it's an epic. Yes, sir.
Rodney George Peacock, his Noontide Trilogy, the 2nd through the 4th of July, the 9th through the 11th, Foldinger Auditorium at the University of Illinois. For more information, go to the Foldinger Auditorium website, or you can phone Rodney, if you like.
You can phone me.
Particularly if you want to be an extra.
And my studio hours are 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You leave a message, I will contact. I will always return my calls.
And the phone number again?
239-7623.
Area code 217.
Area code 217. Been there 5 years at that address. The studio has been. And it's been incorporated as a business since 2000 with the state of RGP Enterprises. And I have a website, RodneyGeorgePeacock.com or RGPEnterprises.com. You can check out the website.
Facebook, MySpace,
all those things. That site take you to the Google and all that. And the history of Vitas. You'll find a real good Vita on MySpace. Real good articles on MySpace, and you can track me down on the internet.
You can be found just about anywhere.
About anywhere, yes.
All right. Well, yes, thanks, sir, for joining us and giving us a preview of the production, and thank you to Anastasia and Laura.
Thank you.
And best of luck with the production. It's quite a massive undertaking.
It's
a killer.
On tomorrow's Live and Local, we have something rather different for you, a conversation with a professor at the University of Illinois, Christina Bashford. We'll be talking about audience etiquette, particularly in the early 1900s in a particular area of England, and then how it relates to what goes on now at concerts. Should be an interesting discussion. I'm looking forward to it. I had said we'd be talking with Bob Vaughn of Sangam Auditorium. We'll actually schedule that for a little later this week and let you know when that's going to happen. I'll have a calendar for you coming up in just a moment at 101, we have the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor. Support for our broadcast today on Live and Local is made possible in part with support from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston, Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. There are no substitutes for donated blood. Blood donation takes 45 minutes and saves lives. Information is at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org. Thank you.